Live with Tyler Fisher. There's no countdown. There's no nothing. I like to start these very unprofessionally.
You don't want to do the thing where we're having a conversation and then I go, are you recording this?
Yeah.
Is this live? Like, people don't know how a podcast works.
You said you're on the road, you're traveling, but what are you doing? You look like you're in your house.
I don't know where I'm in Silicon Valley, which I thought was Silicone Valley until a couple months ago because uh-huh. I'm a little slow. I'm in Silicon Valley.
Silicon. Yeah.
Silicone. Big tick. It's big tit, not big tech.
What are you doing out there?
Yesterday I was in San Jose doing a food and medical freedom conference with Sir Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, great.
And some other wonderful doctors, you know, seed experts, all sorts of people. So I was there just doing stand up on the event.
That's great.
And then I'm off to do a little tour and then back to New York.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of interesting things happening. I had you booked in this time slot. We were going to record the podcast. And then I get a text from Greg Gutfeld this weekend. And he says, I thought the guy was pretty funny. And I'm like, what? What's he talking about? And I clicked on the link and it was the controversial dinner that you did. And with Mediaite saying that you bombed.
I didn't know any of this was online yet.
Yes. Mediaite.
What's Mediaite?
Mediaite is a site that does media. And so it was, let's take a look. We'll start
funny.
The beginning of the show.
Oh,
and
my
so
God.
Anyway, I didn't see it, but Gutfeld saw it and he texted me and he says, I thought the guy was pretty funny. Like, and Mediaite is trying to bill it as Tyler Fisher bombs at radio correspondence dinner.
They don't mic the crowd.
Yes, I know.
As a comedian, you know that. Okay.
Let's take a look then. Let's share the screen because I've got it up here.
Oh, man.
And we can watch this. This is I didn't even know it was.
Oh,
so let's just
look
at the beginning and you can explain it.
Yeah.
So what is this? Are you in like the Back to the Future car?
No, that's the Wolf of Wall Street car.
Okay. Are we hearing it? Do you hear your video?
I can hear it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, because sometimes they mute the audio. Fisher. Okay, so you come on. Your jacket's too big for you.
Too big. That was a last-second decision.
Right. Thank you very much. How about the band, everybody?
This is great.
How about that video? Did that bomb? Did anybody laugh during that video?
They had a sketch that bombed right before I went on, like a five-minute sketch.
I'm obviously a last-minute replacement, but how you guys doing? Thanks for coming out, huh? Thank you for coming to the 57th Speaker of the House vote this month. Sorry, no, the 2023 Radio and Television Correspondents Association Dinner and Awards. Round of applause, everybody, for coming out.
We're here they didn't want to be here.
Well, I mean, look, you can tell that the audience is not mic'd when you come out because you say, please applaud, and then you barely hear any applause.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then I think I kind of like the first joke, which, let's do it.
Capitol Hill and throughout America, and to honor the work you guys do every day. We appreciate it. We appreciate you guys dividing the country the way you do it. I just got a quick note. Just quick housekeeping. In case the sprinkler system goes off, please ignore it. Jamal Bowman is here and, that's just a false alarm.
He had just gotten charged with pulling the alarm thing.
Yeah, screw that guy, huh?
What was the date of this?
This was a couple days ago. This was a couple days ago. So, but they didn't tell me it was live. Didn't know. They said it was this, the kind of retarded cousin of the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah,
I thought there was going to be 20 people from like the radio there. I didn't know it was this. I found out the morning of.
And so were you a last minute replacement?
No, I wasn't. But kind of the theme of my thing was like they wanted me to mock the Speaker of the House and how they couldn't find one. So,
yeah,
you know, they wanted me to kind of really hammer that out, that they couldn't find a Speaker of the House. They couldn't find a guy to do this.
Yeah.
And they didn't, Tom, you know, as a writer, you know, being prepared is the most important. They didn't give me the list of guests until that morning. So I didn't write my stuff until the morning of.
Yeah.
While having a complete nervous breakdown. Because the whole point of this is to roast people. So I got the list of people that morning. And, you know, Biden was supposed to be there, but he wasn't. And it was I don't want to crap on it because I appreciate them having me, but it was kind of a comedian, the worst case scenario for a comedian.
Yeah. Well, so the headline on Mediaite, it says YouTube comic Tyler Fisher heckled by CNN during brutal set at DC media dinner.
Well, and I also was heckled. Yeah.
You were heckled. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, just this all came about because Greg texted me and he thought it was funny. And I think he could hear through the audience, you know, the microphone or whatever.
Well, so just I knew this would happen. So I recorded from my pocket just to in case I, you know, I got ripped up. So I've got the whole thing recorded.
Oh, you do. And so you have you'll have to post that with your iPhone is on in your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. I know how these things go. So I put my iPhone right there, and then I had a friend in the crowd and he filmed. So there was also comedian's worst nightmare. They booked me to do this set in the beginning and then to be the surprise guest at the end where they usually have a keynote speaker. So they brought me back out 2 hours later after dinner as a surprise guest, and it was me again. And the crowd completely turned on me. And I mean, one of the most brutal. I can't believe they didn't post that part of it because that was 10 minutes of me going, you lying cocksuckers, you're a bunch of... Yeah. And they loved it, you know. Once
they
I
did.
Really, yeah, okay. Oh yeah, because I hung out after, so I got feedback from people. They go, we didn't. The first part was okay. They go, we loved the second part when you turned on the crowd.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, I mean, certain people they kind of live for that thing, that type of thing. But why did they do that? With you know, why would they say and now a special surprise guest and then have it be you again?
Because they thought it would be funny. I mean, you don't split up a comedian set. I mean, that's just rule number one, right? So I called them the morning of and I begged them. I said, please let me do it in one 15-minute chunk.
Yes.
You know, I have to build, you know, as so they said, we can't change it. Mm-hmm. And Tom, when I got on for that second time, it was the worst. One of the worst 10 minutes of my life, and I've had a pretty rough life. I went down to the crowd. I started eating people's food. I just start sitting at people's tables and eating their dessert because the crowd was up walking around, 500 people walking around talking, not one person listening, and I had to do 10 minutes. And I'll post that part for sure.
So the Mediaite says nearly everyone knows about the WHCA. But there are several other DC journal dinners that aren't so well known, among them the Radio and Television Correspondents Association dinner. And it sounds like the organizers were ready to have themselves made fun of, right?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So they were ready for that. But I don't know if CNN was ready for it. Was it really CNN? Because it says in the article, they actually said that CNN Table 4, oh, maybe we can find that in there. Where in the set is it? I'll just kind of let's go to the video. And
it was ABC. Somebody ratted them out, actually. During intermission.
It was ABC.
Yeah, I think it
but
was
CNN
ABC.
Got your heckling, I guess, right?
Oh, someone from ABC heckled me.
Okay. So here, let's go to the video.
In high school. Anyways, we're keeping with the theme here of finding a Speaker of the House, just like Mike Johnson. Nobody has any clue who the hell I am. And I look like a far-right extremist, so, you know what I mean? They couldn't even agree on a speaker. That's how divided we are, because everybody's so controversial. Every comedian. I was not, this isn't, Al Franken was supposed to be here. This was supposed to be his.
That's true. Al Franken was.
But,
he was.
You know, Al Franken, his hands were a little busy because of the titty thing. I'm still. Remember that?
That's why they wouldn't hire him, because of that.
Okay, so they wanted him, and then somebody came in and said, we can't have him. He's too controversial. But didn't they know about that?
Oddly, after they hired me, they're like, you know, you weren't our first choice. We wanted this guy. We wanted this guy. We wanted Al Franken was our first choice, but they were too afraid to hire Al Franken. And so I was like, well, I might as well bring that up because I find it pathetic that they're too afraid to hire Al Franken, but they'll get a guy from YouTube they've never heard of who has no fear of, I have nothing to lose.
Well, I mean, I would imagine you'd want to do the White House Correspondents' Dinner as well, even though that might be a rough gig, because I'm sure they would turn on you there. If you did this same set at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I bet you'd be met with a lot of hostility because you were going after the press in the way that they usually, White House Correspondents' Dinner, they have people like Stephen Colbert come in, and they usually go after Trump and, you know.
Fox and Trump.
I guess it's basically, Fox, Trump.
Well, I thought this as an opportunity to, I still made fun of Fox a little bit. I made fun of everybody, but I was like, why not flip it a little bit? Do something they haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Let me see if I have Greg's message, because his message that said, I thought he was funny.
Well, that's good, because I think I'm going on Gutfeld in a week or two.
Oh, good. Okay. So, yeah, maybe that's why, he was on the radar. I don't even see his text now. It must have been an email. But he sent it to the writing staff as well. And then the writers were chiming in, Joe Mackey or whatever, DeVito, and they were like, oh, yeah, he's totally telling them their BS to their faces, which is what happens at these dinners. At any kind of dinner like this, but it usually only comes from one side, right?
Right. So I thought, yeah, might as well. And I really do. I do hate the. I hate the media. I really do. And I think I'm pretty. I think I'm pretty fair. I grew up watching CNN and MSNBC, so I'd consider myself an expert on them. And watching Fox is a kind of a newer thing to me. So I know way more about them than I know about Fox.
Here, let's go to
Rachel Maddow. They tried to get Rachel Maddow from MSNBC to host. She's basically a lesbian Stephen Colbert, right? We can't tell the difference. She's funnier than him. But no, they booked me, some guy you don't know who looks like Zach Galifianakis bang Macaulay Culkin. whereas my girlfriend says Aaron Paul banged Harry Potter. I'm tiny. Can you guys even see me? This is ridiculous. Can you see me at all? This is brutal. I make everything look huge. This is just a Hess car right here. This isn't even a real... This is just an iPad up here. This is just some grass they picked off the stage.
This recording reminds me of every corporate gig I ever did, because you do the corporate gig and you're in this great hall tons of people in there. And what looks like a great set, and it looks like really legit, and you're like, oh, this is going to be my reel for my corporate gigs, you know? And you're like, could I get a copy of this? And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll have the AV department send you a copy. And they send you this gorgeous, high-resolution copy of it's just full of holes. Like, you're doing your set, and you don't hear a thing.
Right. I'm just going to actually pull up. Maybe I'll pull up my audio right now just to see. 59, that was on Tuesday. Let's see. So I'll find it.
I can already hear the crowd though.
Yeah, that might have been a stand-up show at the Improv, actually.
Okay.
So that was, yeah. But
so you didn't have time to read that. You said you weren't aware of the Mediaite article, and so Tommy Christopher was, so if he was there, why is he saying, you know, brutal set? You know, I guess because they can't have an article and they can't say, you know, Tyler Fisher, you know, had a.
Well, what is Mediaite? Is that like a left wing or moderate? Like, what's the.
It used to be fairly moderate. Yeah. Most of the people who work there are very left wing. They have a, I think what there's a couple of like real Fox News hating reporters who are on there. Like, you won't believe what this guy said on Fox. So when I worked on Red Eye, Media Eye was actually pretty fair because they had a bunch of right wing guys working there and a bunch of left wing guys, guys and gals, and they would kind of cover things pretty well. And they liked, because it's a media site, they didn't, you know, they basically were trying to be even handed because, you know, they're looking at the media. So, you know, they don't want to just be 24/7 anti-Fox, but they do have a number of very strident left-wing people who do the classic, you know, you won't believe what this guy said on Fox. And sure. So I find them to be very boring now. I don't know if it's still owned by Dan Abrams. You know Dan Abrams?
Yeah, I think so.
He was a former MSNBC guy, and he started his own media universe. And I think he has his own cable channel now, like News Today, like Newsday or something. And they're trying to be the centrist news site. But I think he might have sold Mediaite to somebody else. I don't even know. But essentially, what I'm trying to say is Mediaite's a pretty lame site now.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to celebrate somebody who's calling out, you know, the division that these people are stirring up. And, you know, and then I go on to really make fun of, like, you guys must be so desperate. You picked a straight white guy. I mean, how desperate were you? Like, really?
It's so true.
And I actually mean that, which is so sad because, but, you know, I went and looked at the past guests. It's like they haven't had a white guy on this. I'm not sure ever, to be honest, in the past 15 years. And all of those videos are on C-SPAN, so you can go back and watch, you know, Roy Wood Jr., Hasan Minhaj, you know, on and on and on and on. I'm looking back 15 years going, I don't know if they've ever had a white guy, so they must be really desperate.
Yeah. They did, I think after, who was it that they there was a very controversial one. Maybe it was, I forget, but then the next year they had Rich Little. So this is probably going back 10 years, but they had somebody do something controversial and, you know, maybe it was Colbert, like made fun of George Bush or something. And then the following year, they didn't want any controversy, so they had Rich Little come and do it.
Okay.
And I don't even think these people knew who Rich Little was. You know, it was already.
But by the way, Tom, a lot of people from CNN came up to me after and said, thank you so much. They go, I work at CNN. You were spot on. Thank you so much. I work at this. You were spot on. So, like, you know, I got the I always stand after the show and I stand by the door to see people's faces. And, you know, you'll know pretty quick how you did. A lot of people came up to me and said I wasn't allowed to laugh, or I had to actually cover my face because I couldn't be seen laughing at this joke about this place. So
I wonder if Fox was down there. Did you see any Fox people there?
I think there was one Fox table they put in like the way, way back.
Yeah.
So
I was one time I was at this White House Correspondents' Dinner and Fox, I felt we were relegated to the back, but somebody from Fox was getting an award. And so we went down there to support them. But let's take a look here. I think
they put them in the bathroom actually.
Yeah.
Fox had a table in the handicap stall.
So let's go to the next thing here. If this is where you're talking about the you know, the pedophile thing.
I should be working for the police department catching pedophiles, right? My body's a booby trap. Just hang out in the playground, just wait, you know, just wait for some creep. Like, hey, little boy, you want to come with me in my van? I go, I don't know, mister. I don't think that's a good idea, mister. I thought maybe instead you want to come with me downtown. Gotcha. Gotcha.
I mean, this is a joke that works everywhere.
Yeah.
CNN, table four, gotcha. This is all set up. You're on to catch a predator. Lock the door. Lock the door. Right? We got this guy. He's got the pedophile glasses on, too. Look at this guy. Right on the nose. You get a good look, pal, huh? Look at that. Can I try those on for a second, sir? Look at this. You see this guy in the playground. Get your fucking kids. Can I swear? Whoops.
So what they did was they put this video, but even for the first day and a half, I didn't realize it was a video of you, because a lot of times, you know, when you go on a website, they have a dumb video that has nothing to do with the show, the article, and they make you watch some dumb video. And then I thought it was one of those. But anyway, they take your act and they print it out. This is like the worst way to have your act represented. So it's got it.
Oh, yeah.
In boldface, it's got you didn't laugh at that. You are a pedophile. CNN table four. Gotcha. This is all a setup. You're on Catch a Predator. Lock the door. Lock the door. I mean, it's like, what?
Yeah, that's the worst thing to do to stand up.
So the transcript is of a section of it is on here, and then they come down here. Audience member shouts, "Tyler Fisher, what was that?" Audience member, "Tell a joke." And that was, it says CNN, but that was ABC, you're saying, right?
I think it was ABC, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was, I think it's all successful. You know what I mean? They're, what do they say? There's no bad publicity, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I did that for the money. I didn't know it was even being filmed. So there wasn't even a, wait a minute, I'll get clips from this. I thought, yeah, this is a, 10-minute gig. Yeah. But they were thrilled, and the tough part is the guy that booked me came up to me during the intermission, during dinner, and said, "Hey, you went too hard on them. So when you come back out, I want you to be really lofty and light and keep it light."
Well, I mean, these last minute demands, it's unbelievable.
And as you know, if you're kind of bombing, you have to do something shocking. There's nothing else you can do. So when I went back out and nobody was watching, I was like, I had this moment where the guy's like, eating dinner, eating cake, looking at me like, "You better behave."
Yeah.
And then 500 people talking, walking around. And I just, what do? You're hired to entertain. So yeah. I think I said, it's funny, you guys are for the free press. You won't even respect free speech, you cocksuckers. and then they all turned around, and then I kind of had them a little bit.
Yeah. I was at a gig one time at the Russian Tea Room. It was like on the 7th floor. There was multiple floors to the Russian Tea Room, and they had corporate gigs in all the upper floors. So I was there, and it was a big hall, and they were at the round tables, and there was a trio, a jazz trio playing. And then and I knew it was not going to go well. And I said, "Are you going to keep them facing the way they are?" Because they were not facing, most of them were not facing the stage. And I knew they would be talking throughout my set. And they said, "Oh, no, they have to have that way. We're going to have you perform during dessert," which they always think is a great idea at these corporate gigs, like dessert and comedy. But it's not, because they're clink, clink, clinking their dessert, right?
Yeah, and they're talking. And
yes. Yeah, they want to talk over dessert.
Did they play the jazz while you were performing?
No. Well, here's the thing. They're playing the jazz over dinner, and then they were going to have me do dessert. So they went up to the band, and they grabbed the microphone. And they said, and this, like, I gave them an intro to say, they totally ignored it. And they said to the audience, "Tom Shalhoub." And like, it was just no sense that there was a comedian coming up, or that was time to laugh. And so as I'm making my way to the stage, I'm like, this is going to be the worst corporate gig I've ever had. And so the band was still there and they were getting ready to clean up their instruments. And so I just walked up to the band. And I said, "Hey, guys, do you know, Lady is a Tramp?" And because I can sing. I know a lot of songs. I'm a barbershop singer,
Oh, yeah.
So I know a lot of songs, but I've never, performed professionally as a nightclub singer or anything. But I went up to the band. I said, "Guys, do you know Lady is a Tramp?" They said, "Yeah." So she gets too hungry. And I just sang the song. And then everyone applauded. And then I said, "Do you guys know, write down and write myself?" I sang with the band for a half an hour. And then I got off stage, and that was the whole gig.
You didn't even do stand-up.
I was not going to do stand-up for this crowd. So nobody was the wiser, except the booker was like, and then I got off afterwards, and she was like, "Oh, that was interesting. You did some music in there, And I'm like, "Yeah, I did a little music, a little comedy." And she's like, "Oh, okay." Like, there was no comedy, not one joke.
You're like, if you were listening carefully, the jokes were in there. They were very subtle. But you're a good entertainer. You made the split second decision that was going to be the most entertaining thing. And I think there's two types of comedians. One who wants to do their thing no matter what. And one who says, they paid, I'm going to entertain them and find whatever their little button is that gets them going.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't be, in bad situations, I will do things like that would be considered hacky, I guess, by comedians. Like, I'll do a trivia quiz or, anything to get them involved.
Yeah.
That's not, because I knew my stand-up would bomb. So let's just do, quiz questions, like almost like Trivial Pursuit. You can lead a game of Trivial Pursuit in a crowded room and you're not going to bomb, It's just...
Yeah.
There's just, because because usually the guy who's leading a quiz, he's not demanding any laughs. So nobody's like, wow, he's bombing. You know, like they can either like it or not.
Yeah, I well, it's funny. I actually did start singing Sinatra at one point.
You did?
I was like, I need something. And it's just whatever I'm doing, it isn't working. There's nothing I can do that's going to get them to listen except either really piss them off to the point where they go, we have to listen.
Yeah.
Or say something so shocking. So,
yeah.
I started asking people in the crowd if they had a joke, and that's how I ended my set. I said, yep. Well, you don't want to hear my joke. Does anybody have one joke so I can end this thing? I said, yep. I kept going, all right, I got 8 minutes left. I got 7 minutes left. And random guy in the crowd told a joke, you know, about his supermodel wife being uninterested in him anymore. And I said, well, just like you guys watching me, you seem completely uninterested. So we're going to.
Yeah,
I'm going to get the hell out of here.
And that was in part two?
That was part two. Yeah, I'm going to try to pull it up because it might be worth just showing you exactly how horrific it was.
This goes to about nine and a half minutes. Would you say that was your first set? One was 9.5 minutes.
That was probably the whole opening.
Yeah.
And then I had to go up and do another 15 an hour and a half later after the whole, you know, the whole presentation, the whole dinner. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. You know, as a comedian, we're doing show after show after show. It doesn't matter. You find the average. You find the average.
Yeah.
And
you
can have one bad one, one good one, and. I find it interesting how different comedians react differently. So, you know, I find a lot of negativity where it's doomsday. I had one bad set. The world is over. And even famous comedians and comedians at the Comedy Cellar, I can't believe that. It's really sad to me.
Yeah. Well, the you made a good point that they had to be desperate to hire a totally white guy, right? Which I would think, you know, that kind of thing, the white guy thing almost would, it takes Stephen Colbert off the list of possible people. Like, that's how gun shy people have gotten, how they demand having, you know, a certain type of identity is, you know, say, you know, a whatever, marginalized, whatever word they're using now. So I think that, you know, I mean, Al Franken could fall victim to that as well, right? But
sure.
You have, you got a dog there?
Well, I have my dog, and then the person I'm staying with has an untrained puppy who's trying to get into my living quarters.
I just heard my dog. My wife must have let her out on the lawn. But speaking under the banner of the white guy thing, let's talk about the manager controversy that happened. How long ago was that? Where?
Well, it's been happening for about 8 to 10 years, and I just finally had the cojones to speak up about it. I was pretty desperate. So, which is also kind of funny because it's really sad to claim only certain people with certain skin color and background can be oppressed or can struggle. And I make a lot of jokes about it, but it is really sad, and it's destroying the minds of young men, and maybe women as well.
Yeah.
Regardless of their race, you know, you might tell a young black boy that he's never going to make it because he's black, and then boom, you just screwed him over for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Or you tell a white kid, you know, you've had it good forever. You tell a 5-year-old that he's been he has all the privilege, and that's the category I fell in, where I was told over and over, you've had it good, white guy. And I'm going, I just got to the party. You know, I have no money. I remember I did America's Got Talent and I had $0. I didn't have money to get to the event, to get to the theater in New Jersey. And so I had to go cash and change and then smash open a Christmas present that had a $20 bill in it, like a vintage, you know, a $20 bill that was not meant to be spent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every year or two, you do stand up in New York, and I used to host, you know, Mark Norman's show, Hot Soup. You know, hey, come, you know, Mark Norman.
Oh yeah,
yeah, fatty, you're gay. I'm fat. You're queer. I love Mark. And every year, an agent would come by and go, why aren't you on SNL or why aren't you on TV? And I would say, I'd like to be. And they'd bring me in and then they'd say, not the time for the white guy. Can't get you anything. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that would happen year after year after year. I met with Jim Carrey's manager in LA. They brought me out there. Same thing happened. And then I had an agent. It was Abrams Artist. And this guy brought me in. I'm going to get you on SNL. They're going to come see you. He emailed me and said, I said, what is going on? You know, it's been 6 months and there's been no activity. I said, is SNL coming? You know, like, are they coming to see me? Yeah. And he just emailed back. He wrote, tough out there for white dudes. And then he fired me. He fired me without telling me. He just took me off the roster. And Tom, I lost it. I lost my mind. I quit acting for 3 years because I thought, you know, I was booking TV shows too. It wasn't like I wasn't getting booked. I was booking guest stars on TV shows and co-stars and stuff. And, you know, we're in a pretty liberal city, New York City. I would tell people and they would go, shh, you can't say that. Or, you know, sit down. You've had your time.
Yeah.
So after 3 years, the pandemic hits, you know, I didn't get the COVID shot. Once again, was not allowed to work anymore and started making my videos online and built up a following. And a manager scouted me and said, you know, we'd love to work with you.
And it probably there was a during that time when you were working on your own during the COVID silliness, you did probably I mean, there was almost like an explosion of I don't know if it's career opportunities, but it was awareness. Like everyone started to know you more. It probably was. Did you feel like your career went up a bump because you were doing so much stuff?
It's hard to say. I mean, I was doing it all on my own. So it is different when you're now the writer, filmer, editor, producer, promoter. You know, I was working 7 days a week because I didn't have any help. So it's tough to say. I know this manager who I'm suing is going to present in court that maybe this was better for me and now my life is better because of it. But you can't really say that when.
Oh, that's good. That's interesting. So I almost gave away the punchline because we're getting to the manager that you're suing. So go into that.
Sure. So yet again, so I quit for 3 years and then I thought, you know, with our career, like you pretty much live on hope. I hope the set goes well. I hope the crowd likes me. I hope somebody sees me. You have to be very naive and hopeful and almost childlike. So I thought, all right, you know, maybe this time it's real and they're actually going to get me on all the shows they're promising. Mm-hmm. And then I got on the phone with the guy again and he said, I've got some bad news. Our company is no longer going to be hiring straight white men. I just lost it. Like, I remember going into my bedroom and I was just like throwing shit and punching stuff because I just thought, how is this possible? You know, I grew up being taught you don't discriminate based on skin color. I got very good at being lectured about that and believing that to be true, which it is. It just felt like a nightmare. And so I took out my phone and I hit record. Because now at this point, my therapist had been training me to record everything.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I hope you're not recording this, by the way.
Yeah,
hanging out.
Yeah, we're just on the phone.
Yeah, we're just on the phone. Yeah.
But the
so I recorded it, and I said, can you repeat that? I said, sorry, you know, you're breaking up or something.
Oh, okay, you weren't even off the phone yet.
We were still on the phone, and I thought, oh, I need to get him saying this on a recording. I need to get him to repeat it. So I just said. I said, I'm sorry. Am I hearing you correctly? Something like that. You know, can you repeat that? You will not work with me just because I'm a white guy. And he said, yeah. And I said, is that company policy? And he said, yeah. And I was like, got it. All right. So.
And they did have a meeting. I'm sure these agencies meet and management companies. They sit around a large table and they have meetings and they're given specific directives. And I'm pretty sure that it came from the top down. We are, you know, whatever you do, don't sign any more straight white guys, right? That's what happened.
I would think so, because if you were going to bet on my career watching the trajectory, it would have been pretty silly to pass up on me, because you know, I've got about a million followers on the internet now. I can tour the world. I mean, like, it would be it wouldn't make sense. And at the time, I wasn't, you know, I really was not doing controversial stuff, which that definition changes based on the person. But when they first discovered me, I by any means was not, COVID had, I don't even think it had really hit yet. I had not really unleashed the demon as far as making fun of everything. So no, that I believe that was their policy, as is with many other companies, including non-entertainment business companies. That was the hot thing.
Yeah.
It still is.
So then what happened? What did you do? You took the recording and you put it on the internet, right?
Well, I beat myself up for a few months. I still, you know, I don't even think I told my therapist about it, because there's a lot of shame around that, right? Being told, you know, hey, you put in 18 years and you dedicated your life to this and gave up a lot.
Yeah.
But we're not letting you in because of something you were born with.
Yep.
So it was very confusing. I think it did a lot of damage psychologically. I started tanning a lot more, that's for sure.
But you're walking around with this recording and you didn't post it right away.
No, I never posted it.
Oh, you never posted it. So how did it get out there?
I you know, after an amount of time, I mean, I deliberated with my therapist probably for months. Is this the right move? Because I knew what was going to happen. I was going to be the evil one.
Yeah.
How dare you, white guy? You know, again, your time is up. You know, I knew it would be, they would spin it to where I was again the problem, which did happen. So I had to decide, do I want this to be part of my life moving forward? But ultimately, not fighting it was killing me. I mean, I was actually losing my mind. So yeah. I thought, if I lose my mind a little bit less and I go through with it, then it's worth it. So I just posted on Instagram, any discrimination attorneys, you know, that follow me. Yeah. Somebody sent me one. I sent him the tape. Because again, my guess was I was going to send this to someone and they were going to tell me to screw off, or, you know, you don't have a case. But this guy was like, I am so sick of this happening. I've been looking for a case like this. And he said, this is one of the most clear cut discrimination cases I've ever seen, because they said it in plain English. So we pursued the lawsuit. You know, they asked me to settle. I said I wasn't going to settle because this wasn't about money for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still ongoing. We haven't done the deposition yet, which I think would be the next step.
Very interesting.
But the judge did say, finally, the judge got the transcript and he was shocked. He was visibly shocked. My attorney said he rarely sees a judge get that emotional. And he just said, "What? This is America?
Yeah.
We're doing this in America?
That's
really
interesting. Yeah. And we're already there. And, but you know, it's funny that, I wonder if he really was shocked, because I don't know if it's surprising to the average person who sees what's happening, you know, around the world. And I guess they're just shocked that they said it. Maybe the judge is shocked that they came out and spoke it.
Yeah, maybe that they said it that straightforwardly. But that is where we're at right now, which is it's a non-issue. It's like,
yeah.
He said it like he was telling me, you know, what he had for breakfast. It was not like he wasn't embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's great. So then what's the time line on it? You say you haven't got to the depositions. When do you get to that?
We don't know. I mean, these things could take years.
Yeah.
So, that's the next step, and then moving forward. But I don't know. Again, the case they're going to make is that I used this for my own personal gain.
Yeah.
You know, but
what if that's after the fact? I mean, you could, you know, I don't, obviously that's a case somebody would make, but I wouldn't think it would be allowed.
I doubt it will be allowed, because it's irrelevant. It has nothing to do. It's like, you know, if a black person, they say you can't eat at this restaurant because you're black.
Yeah.
And then you walk outside and you find a lottery ticket on the ground. They'll say, look, we didn't let him in, but he won the lottery.
Yeah.
I would think that would be irrelevant to the original discrimination case.
Or like Rosa Parks, you're only famous because of this thing on the bus. Come on, you should thank the guy. I mean, that's what, I mean.
Yeah, your TikTok blew up after that, Rosa.
And now, well, I bet Mediaite tomorrow, Tom Shalhoub compares himself and Tyler Fisher to Rosa Parks. How dare he? But that is a perfect example. I think whenever you do the, what if this had happened, you know, you make the example. People go through all of this stuff when they say, oh, let's take the impeachment process and then let's put it on the other side. Let's take this. And so the simplest example would be if you have a black guy in show business and he's with an agency or with a manager. And then the manager calls him and says, we don't take black people anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the same thing. Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
I think you would probably agree that there would be, I would say the entire comedy scene would have been protesting outside of that manager would be fired. The company already would probably go under and be sold. It would have been worldwide news, and I think every comedian would have gotten up and fought it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that stuff doesn't happen. I don't believe there is racial discrimination in the way that it's perceived. I mean, I've never met anybody that's told me I wasn't allowed to work because I'm black or gay or trans or bipolar or by whatever, you know, the new pronoun is. I think it's quite the opposite, where if you have one of those non-white qualities, you're gifted.
They're looking for, and they even say it. This is something that they do say in public, because you'll see, you know, NBC at their annual shareholder meeting will say, we have been, you know, working 24/7 to increase diversity on our network. So they actually say we are looking for racial minorities to fill our lineup with, but that's under the banner of, what do they call that? The multicultural banner or whatever they want to say. So it's safe for them to admit that they are basically giving jobs to people based on their skin color. But then that extra level of saying like, we'd love to hire you, we have everything, you know, lined up to hire you, but we're not taking white guys now. I mean, that's almost like the slam dunk that we were looking for.
Yes, that's the unspoken part, which is obviously going to happen if you say we really only want to take this group. Well, then we have to reject this group. You know, it's black, Ukrainian, Israeli, vegan lives matter now. It's also I thought was kind of funny, Tom, because you know people would get slammed for saying all lives matter.
Oh yeah.
But now that the acronyms are getting way longer. So we're almost back to all lives matter. It's like black, Israeli, Palestinian, lesbian, gay, trans, you know, paralyzed lives matter. I go, that's all lives. It's just not white people.
They could save time. But you
just say everybody but whites matter.
Let's go on here, because I discovered something earlier, because I was trying to get to you. I was trying to DM you, and why don't I share the screen and see if this... okay, we're going to present this, and we'll go to X, right? So here's on... Can you see that screen there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's search and make sure I spell it right. Tyler.
Yep. F-I-S-C-H-E-R.
Tyler Fisher, right?
Completely okay. Shadow banned for a
Wait,
year.
Where are you?
On Twitter.
You are shadow Tyler banned. Fisher, but you're not there. Okay, so
my
now
account,
let's click so return. Return. So Tyler Fisher. Tyler Fisher Live. I got you on there earlier when I did this. So you won't come up in the dropdown, but I did Tyler Fisher, and I hit return, and all these different... accounts talking about you came up, but you didn't come up. So you were mentioned, and then your Mediaite thing was mentioned, but I couldn't get to your actual Tyler Fisher account.
It's been a year.
There was nothing that came up.
Yeah, I'm shadow banned on Twitter, which is so annoying because I didn't use Twitter. And then Elon was like, no more shadow banning. So I decided, all right, I'm going to put all my stuff on there. And my videos were going viral. It was my account was going up towards 100,000 followers from like 20,000. You know, it really was exploding. And I, by chance, I met Elon Musk's lawyer the other night, and I told her, and she was shocked. And so I wrote my name down, and she said, I'll show it to him. I don't know if she will, but I wrote my handle and my name. And she's like, well, I'm going to see Elon tonight. And I was like, well, please tell him. This is not fun.
I have the drop down now here. So this is basically what came up before I did this live stream with you. They had all these other Tyler Fishers, and you can see none of them are named Tyler Fisher. And your name is, what's your moniker on there?
Tyler Fish.
Tyler Fish.
You want to type that in and see if that comes up? I doubt it.
Well, let's do how do you spell it?
T-Y.
Yeah.
T-H-E.
Oh, Ty the Fish.
And then F-I-S-C-H. Unbelievable.
Not, doesn't come up.
Unbelievable. So yeah, it really affects. This is the other infuriating part. It's like, if I'm not going to be in Hollywood and I don't have a chance with actually getting my foot in the door anymore.
Yeah,
I'm fully dependent on big tech, and so I'm now I'm shut down on TikTok. I'm shut down on Twitter, and I'm shut down on Facebook.
Yeah.
So 3 out of 5 I'm shut down on. So if YouTube goes, I'm
done. What was it? Twitter? I mean, not Twitter. Facebook.
Facebook froze me.
YouTube, did they do it because of COVID?
You don't know. You know, you never know. It's like there's you know, the old George Carlin thing, you know, the 7 words you can't say.
Yeah.
You know, now there's like 700 topics you can't talk about, which all have 7 words under each umbrella. So there's thousands of trigger words now. Where is it, an algorithm? Is it someone reporting it? But it affects the life of comedians and non-performers as well.
Absolutely. So they took you off, but you never were banked or anything. I mean, I know some people who were, they took them off of PayPal, so they couldn't even run their own Patreon, PayPal. They couldn't take payments on their website. So it's essentially, you really are kicking them out of everything when you take their ability to bank away.
Yeah, that's a good way to actually create an extremist. You know, take away their, you know, it's almost like they know they're doing that. Well, we don't really have extremism in this country the way they say it. So if we just punish enough people, maybe we'll actually have this domestic terrorism that we claim to be the biggest threat in the country, which is wrong.
Yeah. And if you had a winter hat, you know, and, you know, put a fur hat and a gun, and you really do look like the classic extremist.
Yeah, but I also look like, you know, the yoga teacher or the barista in Brooklyn.
Right, so like, right.
You know, yes. Tyler, he, him. Yeah, I have a joke about that. If we get into a civil war, we're not going to know who's on what extreme. That each side will have to have, like, obscure questions that only one would know. So, you know, the lefty sees a guy, he doesn't know, he's like, you know, are you on our side? The guy's like, yeah, I'm on your. He's like, what's a macchiato? And he's like, oh, shit. Oh, crap.
You'd have to pick them out online. You know how they pick out the traffic lights, you know?
Yeah, pick the QAnon guy.
So I think we have a happy ending here, because when I was doing the search and I saw that you were shadow banned on X, I was like, okay, now I got to find him on Google to go to his site. And so this is what I saw, because I hadn't seen this. Let's go to the rap. What's the headline? 33 and West talent agency signs comics Masood, Boomgard, Jimmy Dore, and Tyler Fisher. When did that come out?
They already dropped me for being white. No, I'm kidding.
It's September 20th. So this is fairly new news, though.
Yeah. I've been trying to get a touring agent for years, because I have, you know, I've got the online following, a really great, supportive, very supportive online following. So, you know, out of every agent in the world, 33 and West was the only one that was willing to work with me, which is
and Jimmy Dore. And then this guy, Masood, Are they all, because, you know, Jimmy Dore is obviously very outspoken. He was very good on COVID. I mean, he got vaxxed and then he came out against the vaccination. So like that's the, he's like public enemy number one because he bought into it and then he kind of exposed it. Is Masood similarly controversial?
I'm not sure. I actually yeah. not seen his like, stuff.
I don't really care.
A lot of, you know, he got 12 boosters, Tom, and he rejected the 13th. 13 yeah. was a placebo, but they bring on all types of guys. You know, I think mostly guys that have built up a online following.
Yeah.
I think that's who they have been.
Yeah, it says here Masood got a following during COVID. Again, he had a lockdown comedy special from his home called My Father's House, 2 million views across TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. So, yeah, I mean, all three of you guys, I think Jimmy Dore, he's been around for years. But again, during COVID, I think he saw his support balloon.
Sure.
Just like you guys. So anyway, that's a happy ending. But
so,
again,
yeah, now I'm touring for the first time ever.
That's great. And so, again, you don't want to give in on that though, because they're going to try to use that against you in court, your newfound success. You got to keep crying poverty and complaining because you got this suit coming up.
yeah as there's a pool, I'm in a pool house here. He has to stay in a pool house, Your Honor, a pool house. yeah I mean, you know, there's plenty of damage done that I'll have to talk about in court.
Or even if it were not. I mean, it is, if there were no damage done, like if there were no monetary damages, you still can't do it.
You still can't do it. Can't do it. Yeah.
It's like the vaccine. Even if it wasn't causing people to drop dead, you can't force me to take it.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, warp speed. Warp speed, which is funny. When I didn't get it, people said I was like this far right Trump guy, and I was like, Trump. That was Trump's vaccine. That would not have been made.
He doesn't shut up about that vaccine.
Warp speed, right? Warp speed, so quick, right? So quick. It goes fast, Tom. No, look, it goes fast, quick, very, very quick than warp speed, right? Nobody. I'm like, if I like Trump, I would have gotten 500 of those things, man. I'd be like, I got my NRA tattoo and my mRNA tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Silly world we live in.
It is.
Did you get attacked? So what's I'm fascinated by you is that, you know, you're beloved in the stand-up scene. You're also on Fox News. Have people attacked you for that, or have they just said, well, Tom's a good guy and he's a great comic? So,
yeah, some people. I think, you know, it was always, and the thing is, I was always two things. I was always right wing and I was always talking about it because I love to talk about politics.
Yeah.
I was always right wing and I was always, I had a stand up act that didn't talk about politics. I like to talk about my life and, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. So I had my act, and then so people, hey, I heard you were. So even when I was doing the gut, doing Red Eye when Greg was the host, and then I took over Red Eye, most people were, you know, they were just, he's a good guy. You know, all right. Yeah. So he's right wing, you know. Then there was always people who were left wing. They were just completely offended. They don't have any friends who were Republican or on the right. But
or successful, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, God forbid.
Yeah.
Comedian has a stable job.
So there, and even during Red Eye, when I was the host of Red Eye, it was not, the people hadn't lost their minds yet. Once Trump became president, they lost their minds so badly that they couldn't, there were people who, they were friends with me all through my life. Knowing I was right wing, they would sit down and have coffee with me. And they were like, oh, Shalou, you're so right wing. It's so funny, whatever. It was over. Like, they literally couldn't talk to me anymore. So they cut me out of their life because Trump really got, you know, I mean, I understand Trump is a lot of people, he rubs them the wrong way, but he made them crazy.
The left wing media is what really, and I believe it was a brainwashing because I was victim of it. I almost ended the relationship with my grandmother. Thank God I didn't. She passed away maybe 3 weeks ago, and I was able to have 2 years of a relationship with her because I started to move certainly more center, maybe center right. But it's really sinister what they're doing. I mean, the amount of emotion and passion, they're great actors, you know. Yeah. Rachel Maddow and these guys, they really get you riled up.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what the solution is, but man, I believed every word I heard on those channels my whole life.
Yeah, that's interesting. The danger to democracy. They're playing that one up very big now that it is a the people, the MAGA people who are, I'm not even really a MAGA person, but I go out in the red state world and I love these MAGA people, the kind of people who wear Trump hats. I like them much more than I like Trump. Like, I love Trump's supporters. Trump's supporters are like the best people, and they're so fun to be around and everything.
They really are.
But that's the thing is, if the people on the left hate anyone more than Trump, it's those people. It's the people with the Trump hats that they really, and they really think that they are, I mean, you know, terrorists, domestic terrorists or something, because they've been brainwashed in that way, you know?
And I find when I perform for, you know, maybe a more right-wing crowd, they really let me make fun of everything. My 10-minute closer is on Trump. I need to stop doing it because I need to move on and find a new closer, but... You know, here I am with my new hour, and my closer again is about Trump and his rallies and stuff, and they love it and they laugh. But then if I do a more left wing crowd, well, there's landmines everywhere that they won't let me walk on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is. It's hard for them to have fun with it. But obviously, just even when you like launch into Trump, there's something fun about it. But you have to have a lighthearted atmosphere. If they think Trump is Hitler, of course doing a Hitler impersonation to close your show isn't fun. You know?
Well, what's become really fun though is everybody loves the Trump jokes, because at the Comedy Cellar, those crowds are wildly diverse politically. Yeah. And they're from all over the world. And the people that love Trump, they just want to hear his voice. So they're laughing. And the people that hate Trump, they really think I'm nailing them. So it's been so fun to do that, because everyone's enjoying it for different reasons. But the right thinks I'm doing it in support of him. The left thinks I'm doing it because I think he's Hitler. And I let them make their own decision. But
yeah. So this is great. Great talking to you. And I think I don't know if this live video on Twitter is going to do anything to help your shadow banning problem on X.
Elon, please.
It's got to be Elon or Elon's lawyer or whatever. But maybe this, maybe this will do something. And if not, anyone can go if they're interested. I want people to look at your videos. I know people who say, hey, have you ever heard of Tyler Fisher? Like, they kind of come to me. They've seen your YouTube videos and things like that. So they can just go to what? TylerFisher.com, right?
TylerFisher.com. Yeah, I'm on tour right now. So when is this going up, Tom? Are you going to post this?
Yeah, I will post it on my podcast on Monday, a week from today. But it's already up on the internet. So this is kind of an experiment that I'm doing. I decided to go live with you. And, what the heck? Not that many people listen to my podcast. They see me on Fox, and I'm not very ambitious. Like, I don't really care about, because this is for fun, this podcast, you know?
Yeah, it has to be, though.
Yeah, but I'm never like, you don't hear me say, and like and subscribe so we can get those numbers up. Like, I don't really care. I'm on a TV show, so, you know, this is just fun for me.
That's good, because that ends up, you becoming kind of a drone. I find myself doing it. Even this last couple of days, I didn't post any videos, and I'm going, well, my career's over.
Yeah, you got to keep those numbers up.
Yeah. So if it's live, I'll be in Indianapolis tomorrow, November 1st, mm-hmm. Milwaukee, November 2nd, Dubuque, Iowa, November 3rd. And then from there on out, I've got shows all winter.
Excellent. So look them up. Tyler Fisher. Don't forget the C. I've done that.
Don't forget the C. Yeah, don't forget the C. The Democrat, they always forget the C, right? They're destroying spelling. They're destroying spelling, Tom. Right?
I hope you do, Gutfeld. You said you're slated to do it?
I was supposed to do it last week, and I think the Israel thing, it's just shifted it a bit.
Yep.
Because they didn't want to have a Jew on. No, I'm kidding. I'm only part Jewish. So I think, something like November 13th I'm supposed to be on.
Okay.
Very excited.
So that's good. Hopefully you'll get in that rotation because Gutfeld is the new king of late night and he's driving
so
up
excited.
My numbers. Now, you know, I was always dependent on, you know, other things. I toured with Jim Gaffigan for a while. That was great, kind of milking off his audiences. And then I was milking off of Gutfeld and Red Eye. Mm-hmm. And I could, you know, finally after Red Eye, I could fill a comedy club. But now with Gutfeld, just being the occasional guest on there, or frequent guest rather, I'm selling out much bigger rooms.
So happy to hear that. And it's also like a nice celebration and a FU to these late night talk shows who, you know, could have had us on, right?
Yes. And now they're although Jimmy's always been good to me. I like Jimmy. Jimmy Fallon is
Jimmy's my great.
Guy.
Jimmy's
fantastic.
Great.
And I'll tell you something about Jimmy Fallon, who is a great guy. And I was doing the Ragtime Gals with Jimmy. I've done it for, you know, for years, basically the past 10 years. It's an occasional bit on there where we sing Barbershop. When I got the Fox News gig, a lot of the people around NBC, the producers there, thought, okay, we're going to have to let that go. He's working on essentially a late night show. I wasn't on the same time slot. I was on at 3 a.m. But some of the producers there were like, are we going to have to let this guy go? And Jimmy was like, no. He's a friend. He's my friend. Keep him on the, you know. So, and he was glad for me. When I got Red Eye, he congratulated me. He said, dude, you're the host of your own show. He was so excited for me.
That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, he's never made it a thing. I'm on a right-wing network across the street from him. But whenever they've had a thing, he brings me over. And I just did a thing with him on NBC on That's My Jam. We did it last spring.
Oh, great.
So he's always been great. And he doesn't care about that at all, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, ultimately, mostly very successful people are not on the left. They're far left for sure.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he just wants to entertain people. I'm sure he wishes we were in the days of Johnny Carson, where he would still be ascendant. He would be he would be the king of late night if the world was like it was in Johnny Carson's day.
It's really sad. I've always wanted to be on a late night show, but that's why I'm extra excited to be on Gutfeld, because I'm like, well, I held off and now I'm on the number one late night show on TV. So screw you all.
Fantastic. All right. We'll end it here and we'll do this again soon. We'll have I'm going to leave you to go to the internet and search about all the controversy that you've been
I'm so excited. Yeah. I'll go for a swim or I'll hate myself. I'll take my pick.
Excellent. All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tom.
See you later.